I was born Jonathan Aaron Steele to the parents of William and Elizabeth Steele. I am a Leo, born under the sign of the lion. And I was raised in a lower middle class family with only one brother, Michael, whom I loved dearly. He was 5 years my senior. My father's nickname was Red, which I could never understand why, because his hair was sandy blonde. Nevertheless, the name stuck. So when my brother was born, my father became Big Red, and my brother, Little Red. I should have known from the first time when I realized their special connection that I just didn't fit into my father's plans. And as I grew older, the constant comparison between my brother and myself left little doubt who was the image of perfection in my father's eye. To him, my brother could do no wrong, and I became the invisible boy, the proverbial black sheep. And I soon figured out that red and black don't mix. The beatings I received became more and more frequent, to the point where I would ask my father, "Am I the orphan son you would never need?" But oddly enough, I worshiped the ground my father walked upon. My brother and I were a strange mixture, as different as daylight and dark. Looking back, it's hard to imagine we came from the same parents. And I sometimes wondered if we had the same father. But I always dismissed that idea, as my mother was far too religious, my father as well, to ever even think of such a thing. But my brother, when always sensed my parent instilled insecurities, tried his best to encourage me, for I was different and he knew it. He often told me when I was born, an angel flew over my bed and christened me with a magic wand and said, "You shall be the one." And I had no idea what the one was, but as I grew older, I began to understand. Most boys put their mother on a pedestal and worship them like the Virgin Mary. But with her too, my relationship was different, and not for the good. She was opinionated, uneducated, sometimes prejudiced, overbearing, believed everything she read, true or not, and when it came to religion was overzealous to say the least. A mind-boggling combination, but she was pretty, very pretty. And I would often wonder, bordering on complete confusion, how a person of this description could rationalize life. This was a series of characteristics that many times in my life I would look back on in bewilderment, and the women I sought after when I was older would be nothing like her. In the pain of youth, the misery of my neglect would manifest itself in many ways. Depression, my enemy. Fear, my friend. Hatred, my lover. And anger, fuel for my fire. These four characteristics of my personality would become the guiding force in my life and would control everything I did or was to become. I shall explain later in the story about them, which I call my four doors of doom. The mirror, the great plaything for man's vanity. The mirror was to become at times my altar of refuge, and at others, my alter ego and its magnificent obsession with the relentless pursuit of attention. It served as a chilling reflection of my own wretchedness and my greatness. It was the one place I could go to see inside myself, to find love in an otherwise loveless household, where I could be great where I could be anything or anyone I wanted to be. 100% pure escapism until I discovered its precious secret. The mirror lives. It breathes. It talks. It lies. It has a personality all its own. It is a genie that grants all the wishes you could ever dream. At least in my case. All except two. It was my 14th birthday, the day that changed my life forever. My brother Michael, the one person who was my guiding light, my friend, my hero, was killed by a drunk driver in a head-on collision. He died instantly. I couldn't even bring myself to go to his funeral. My agony was so great. I just couldn't come face to face with him that one last time. My failure to attend intensified my parents' resentment for me even more. But from that moment on, nothing seemed to matter. Especially that living hell called home. For 1 year after his death, I roamed the streets in a fog, barely conscious of anything or anyone. And I discovered alcohol and girls. Drugs, and in general, a life I'd never known, which was exciting, frightening, and wonderfully dangerous. And it was then, as I staggered through a downtown city street in one of my drunken rages, I stumbled across a small music shop, and in the window there stood the instrument, the fiery tool that would become the object of my newfound desire. The instrument of my passion, my obsession. The blood-red six-string. It was like I'd known the thing all my life. I soon found it was the only way I could truly express myself. It was a way to vent all my frustrations, all my pain. Completely open all my four doors of doom. And I found myself going to the mirror for counsel, less and less. Because of this, my songs seemed to write themselves and I knew my destiny was in my music. But I was going to have to get out of this backwoods town I was in if I was ever going to succeed. And I was 16 going nowhere. And the only thing my parents knew was live, work, die. And if I stayed there, that's exactly what was going to happen to me. I was going to die. So I ran away to the big city. With the lights, excitement, the danger, and a chance for me to finally live, and to do my music without the persecution I had known for so long. I hitchhiked all the way, with a suitcase in one hand and my guitar in the other. And as I stood at the edge of the city, the magic of the place was incredibly intense. It was to be my new home. The place I would call the Arena of